Their families say they won't bury the dead until the government takes action to stop a growing wave of attacks on Pakistan's Shia community. Baluchistan's new governor says officials are scared of the terrorists, and that's why they can't stop them. Others are asking why the judiciary has failed to convict a single terrorist for targeting innocent civilians. This is The Debate.
Pakistan is witnessing a second day of protests after a bombing that killed nearly 90 Shia Muslims in the country's southwest. Saturday's attack took place in Quetta, the capital of Baluchistan province, inhabited mainly by ethnic Shia Hazaras. The deadly assault was the second to target the ethnic Pakistani community in just a matter of weeks. Nearly 100 Hazaras perished in a double bombing in Quetta in January. That attack sparked nationwide protests, with the victims' families refusing to bury their dead until they received assurances of security from the government, but to no avail.
Where are the concrete steps? Steps means a hot pursuit of the culprits, investigation, prosecution, arrest and conviction.
Barely a month later, the Hazara community has been targeted again. Once again, thousands have staged a sit-in protest in Quetta, refusing to bury their dead, demanding decisive action from the government.
Our request is here that we want army should come here and target operation should be started.
Pakistan is home to the second largest Shia population in the world. But in recent months, anti-Shia attacks have reached one of their worst levels. Last year, 400 Shias were killed in targeted attacks. And since the beginning of 2013, 200 Shias have died in attacks in Quetta alone. The killings have prompted many to accuse the U.S.-backed Pakistani government and military of turning a blind eye to sectarian violence in the country.
This sectarian conflict is spreading all over the country. It's not just now confined to Baluchistan. I believe that there are several camps of theirs which are located in Baluchistan, and even then, they are not being targeted and they are not being arrested, and serious action is not taken is being taken against them.
Well, joining me now via Skype from London is Chairman of the Association of Pakistani Lawyers in the UK, Mr. Amjad Malik. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I'd also like to welcome our guest with us from Islamabad, political and strategic affairs analyst, Mr. Sayed Tariq Pirzada. We're also expecting another guest from London. I will introduce him as soon as he joins the programme. But first, my first question to our guest in Islamabad, Mr. Tariq Pirzada. Is the government, would you say, responsible for a rise in Shia killings?
Well, who else? The government has all the powers. The government enjoys the support of the parliament. The government enjoys, as it claims, the support of the party, which is the People's Party and its coalition partners. They are in control. They have the army under them. They have the ISI under them. They have the MI and other intelligence agencies under them. They have the frontier constabulary, which is a paramilitary force under them. They have all the tools available to them. Then the courts are very active in the country. If you find the culprits, gather the evidence, take them to the court, make them an example, and prosecute and keep them in, and send them to prison or to the required punishment, what would happen? The result would be a message would be sent to the extremists in the country that there is no room for them. But because they're not getting the message, because the government in Islamabad is more worried about engaging in corruption, that's what they're doing.
Right. So I will come, of course, to the question of why this is happening. But let's just get the view of our guest with us there from London as well. Now, Mr. Malik, Quetta, for instance, is a garrison town, we're hearing. And that means that each and every street is manned by intelligence operatives. Still, people are saying that these militants are operating with impunity. Why do you think this is happening?
Well, thank you very much on this very sad day. And I personally think that government is responsible to protect the lives of people. And like you said, Quetta is, for a long time, is under the control, indirectly or directly under the control of law enforcement agencies. And this kind of occurrence, again, in January, 130 lives were lost, and all the assurance in vain, and people have to face the death again, around by 89, 90 people. I think it's a sad occurrence. And failure goes to the government's pocket, as well as it's an intelligence failure. But I think there are many reasons, but no reason can justify that sort of killing. And Shia community is justified in not only their condemnation, but also mm-hmm. their demands. And those demands should be met. Second part of your question, it is not only intelligence failure, but Balochistan for a number of years is going through insurgency. And during that insurgency, due to 9/11, all the resources, all the war on terror resources are on the border near Peshawar rather than in this area. And all the sectarian violence groups are getting a free hand, and they are walking all over with impunity. And that is a tragedy in a country like Pakistan.
Right. We have put the issue of this debate on our Facebook page. And on that page, we did put the question of why we're seeing this happen. I'd just like to, before we go to the next question, take a look at one of the comments that's been put on our Facebook page. We're saying that Pakistani Shia Muslims are increasingly under terrorist attacks. They're furious at a lack of protection from local and national forces in the face of these repeated attacks. What do you think is the reason for these increasing attacks on Pakistani Shia Muslims? Mr. Omar Musa has said Pakistani Shias are citizens of Pakistan, so the government should take serious action. And that brings me to the question of Mr. Pirzadeh, if you can respond to this. Is there a mentality, do you think, in parts of Pakistan, maybe even among the politicians, that these people, the Hazara community, the Shia community, should not be considered as part of the Pakistani people? I mean, I was reading one article suggesting that it's time for those Shias to actually move out of Pakistan.
Well, I would not consider the last suggestion as a reasonable suggestion. As you said in the early part of your question, Shiites and Sunnis, they're all the citizens of Pakistan. All communities belong to Pakistan. This is their country. So exit or exodus is not the solution. The solution is the enforcement of law, the quick dispensation of just administration of justice. The issue is, can the government establish its writ in every street and corner of Balochistan and in the rest of the country? Look, 3,000 people, let's expand the question. 3,000 people died last year in Karachi. They were brutally murdered. Not a single person was brought to justice, and nobody has been sentenced to appropriate punishment, number one. Number two, In the NWFP, the former province of NWFP, which is now known as Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, which is along the Afghan border, right, we see suicide bombings day in and day out, day in and day out. Then, of course, the city of province of Punjab, the whole of Pakistan is burning. And I hate to say that, let me point out that the person who is the president of Pakistan and the head of the People's Party, he is a person of Shiite faith, as a matter of fact. And it's a shame that he cannot take actions for which he enjoys the absolute support of all the communities, as was demonstrated by today's general strike in Pakistan, from the Sunnis to the Shiites.
I'm just hearing that our guest from London is with us now. I'd like to welcome political commentator Mr. Athar Hafiz Gowri, who's with us with the continuation, of course, of this discussion. Now, Mr. Gowri, the question that we asked first was why we are not seeing the amount of action that maybe would be necessary in the face of these attacks. There have been continuing for some time now. I earlier said the Balochistan governor saying that the blasts are a result of the failure, he said, of the security and intelligence agencies. Others were saying that that's just an excuse and that just means that they're trying to shift the blame actually from the government. What do you think?
Well, what I think is probably neither of the above. I wouldn't blame the government because I wouldn't consider it to be something which they can or can maybe or maybe they cannot control. I believe that this is beyond their control, and I think it's also not a matter of religion either. It seems to me that there are clearly outside players involved. Mm-hmm. There are clearly outside influences involved who have an agenda, who are the real people who will gain by all this bloodshed and this mayhem. So for us to, for the victims to, and for the Shia minority, I think it's 20% in Pakistan, for mm-hmm. them to actually target the government and to demand from them is understandable, but I don't think
Mr. Gowri, if I could just jump in here. Some people have been saying that the security forces actually know who the perpetrators are. I mean, of course, the Lashkar-e-Taiba group that's claimed responsibility has said that I did this, we did this. But others are saying that those involved have been recognised, but they're not being arrested. Why?
Well, because I don't think they have been identified. I don't think they can be identified. The people who are really behind this, who are really behind the curtain, are really not going to come out from behind the curtain. And I don't think it is a local issue. It's not a religious issue, mm-hmm. in my view. And I have been watching this situation quite carefully. It is the same situation that we've seen happen. It's a mm-hmm. successful formula at play. And it is setting one off against the other, then sitting back and rubbing the hands and watching the show, to be honest. And it is another way of fragmenting Pakistan, of destabilizing it, and for the Pakistani public, for the man on the street to say, oh, it's the Shia or it's the Sunni or it's this or that, which they are, they have that mindset anyway.
I'll just stop you there, if I may. Let's just go to, I guess, Mr. Malik in London and have his opinion on this as well. Now, Mr. Malik, the question would be now, who are these armed groups anyway? I mean, what is their intention then? Is there this aim to divide the nation for what end? And who is basically behind these groups? Who's funding these groups?
Well, I think the option of letting the Shias go out of the country is, I think, unreasonable. Shias are as part of Pakistan as anybody else, and they have full ownership. And whatever their demands are, they are just, because it's the government's duty, whether they can or cannot. It is their inborn, it's their duty under the constitution to protect the public, and that includes the religious minorities. Now, your question about the groups. The groups are walking with impunity because sectarian violence has been a name of the game in late 90s and 80s. But now, because of the resources are less and the emphasis and priorities are on the borders near Afghanistan, then these groups are not dealt with by the weaker criminal justice system. So even if you catch people, they cannot be put on like successful trial, and they are not made example for other groups, mm-hmm. so that they take lead, that they know that the government will handle them very strictly. So they are not on the priority list. That's why they are walking with impunity. And imagine in January, 130 people, same kind of protest, government came, begged them that bury your dead bodies and we will take action. Even again, intelligence failure, government failure, similar kind of attack. And dozens of people dead.
So we have two conflicting views on this. Let's get Mr. Pirzada's view as well. Mr. Pirzada, do you think that the government is, as our guest there was saying earlier on, Mr. Gowri, is basically incapable of dealing with the situation because it's gotten out of control, and that there are some forces involved here who are funding these groups who have their own aims behind this?
I said in some of the show that when you put together 2,000 pounds of explosives and use them in one incident, obviously you're talking about putting together technology You have some people from across the border, be it Afghan elements or be it the Indian-supported elements, who are obviously very much interested in seeing a destabilized Pakistan being these, and to destabilize Pakistan, their efforts continue. Mm-hmm. That does not mean that the sectarian violence is not there. The issue is, when a huge tragedy like this happens, you have to ask a question: how was this arranged? Who was mm-hmm. behind it? Because, you know, if you take a look at the sectarian violence itself, yeah. we have been seeing that in Pakistan, but the quantum and the magnitude of the violence has never been this huge. So right. the last two incidents, the one in January and the one that happened 2 days ago, mm-hmm. they are very unique. So you just, and then the Balochistan Liberation Army, that has been trying to secede from Pakistan. This is what they have been trying, because they are in yeah. very small number. They have been trying to hide under the cover of these kind of situations, that is a sectarian
Mr. Pirzada. So we are asking here, do we acknowledge that the sectarian violence does actually exist or not? But before we put that question to our guest in London, just let's take a look at the other comments that have been put up on our Facebook page by our viewers. The second comment that we've gotten in response to the question that we asked on our Facebook page of what do you think is the reason behind the increasing attacks on Pakistan's Shia Muslims. One of our viewers has put a comment there by the name of Arshid Baba. Now, he said, I am a Sunni, and most painful moments come when incidents like yesterday's happen, referring, of course, to the Quetta bombings. When will we learn that this sectarian clash will destroy us? The enemies of Islam know very well how to exploit this, and very unfortunately, some among us fall prey to the sinister design of the enemy. So again, when we do have this reference to the enemies of Islam by one of our viewers here, Mr. Gowri in London, would you say, acknowledge that the sectarian clashes in Pakistan are very real?
Oh, I think they are very real, and nobody can deny that. But I don't believe that they are the cause. If we start focusing on the sectarian violence and the divisions between different sects, then that is basically a distraction, and that's the distraction that they are planning for us to fall into. Mm-hmm. The thing is, this is beyond religion. This is beyond, as I said before, it's beyond sect. There is a pattern taking place, a very familiar pattern that we've all seen. We've seen it before, and it's not much difference in this case either. We've seen the support and the building up of a minority group within the country. We've seen the Western sympathies falling on their side, and the development and planning that goes in, and then in the end it all comes to one thing. It means that the West, the America, and whoever its allies are at the time, will come in on a humanitarian ground, because then there is nothing mm-hmm. other than the plan for fragmentation and to partition Pakistan. Pakistan in such
yeah. You're referring here to outside enemies then. Let's just, before we continue, refer to one of the comments that's been put up on our Facebook page concerning, again, this reference to the outside enemies. One of our viewers on our Facebook page, by the name of Manzar Abbas Shah, has just read to you what he's written for us. I think Zionists are behind this in a big picture. They are backing Salafi Wahhabi-based group Al-Qaeda, and in every Muslim country where Shias or Sunnis in large numbers, they're using this formula to divide and rule. We can see where the USA or NATO gone, Al-Qaeda made ground for them. And on this note, absolutely. Mr. Malik now in London, some have been suggesting that the situation in Afghanistan is going to have an effect on this. Once NATO withdraws from Afghanistan, actually, this problem is even going to get worse.
Well, I personally think that you cannot blame other outsourced or outside agencies or the countries for your homegrown problem. Sectarian violence does exist, and the government's duty is to protect the public, and especially the religious minority groups who are under attack from the majority groups. And I personally think that criminal justice system needs to be strengthened. They need to make some showcase cases where a clear deterrent reflect the priority of the government, and you can tell and assure the religious minorities that those people are brought to task, which are taking the law in their hands. At the moment, they are walking with impunity again.
So, Mr. Malik, you're saying that this is a homegrown problem. What is basically the root of this problem then? Why do you think these attacks are being launched?
Well, two, three things. Even if it's supported by outsourced agency outside the country, still government is under a duty to detect, deter, and defeat those attempts from outside so that people cannot be funded, people cannot be aided and assisted to perpetrate such attacks. But even then, they bear a responsibility. Homegrown is because sectarian violence does exist, and the religious divide then become aired as a work as a fodder.
Mr. Malik, I'll stop you there if I may. We are short of time. I'd just like to get the response from our guest, Mr. Gowri, before I go to Islamabad. Now, Mr. Gowri, there is a major question here about the response of the Pakistani government. Either way, even if this is an internal problem, if it's an external problem, why isn't the government taking enough action? Why are we seeing all these accusations against the government? Wouldn't you say that it's not doing enough?
No, I wouldn't say it's not doing enough. I wouldn't defend the Pakistani government in any way, shape, or form. But you have to give you have to look at the reality of the situation. And the reality of the situation is that the Pakistani government has no clue, doesn't have an idea about who is behind this itself. This would actually make sense. And that's why you have a lack of action, because they don't really know who's behind it. They are being played by themselves. They have no clue, and therefore to actually blame the Pakistani government is actually exactly what the planners are hoping to achieve by all of this.
Okay, now I'd leave the concluding remarks to our guest in Islamabad, Mr. Pirzada. Would you agree with that?
No, I don't. Look, if you leaving aside whether the government knows anything or not, suppose you want to protect the Hazara community, and suppose there are four buses that leave from Quetta to Imam Mashhad, to Mashhad, where Imam Raza is buried. Okay, all you can do is provide strong armed escort to those buses on a daily basis, and that will become a very safe journey from Pakistan to Iran. That is just a minor example. But is the government A, able to do that? B, are they competent to do that? And number three, are they interested in doing that? Look at Mr. Zardari. He is more, hold on, let me just finish it. Look at him. He has, and I have nothing against him, he has only one thing that he's doing these days. Whenever he holds a meeting, he has his son as his successor sitting next to him, whom he is trying to nurture. If he were any worried about the people of Pakistan, there wouldn't be 3,000 dead last year in Karachi. There wouldn't be any Hazara dead in Balochistan. Mm-hmm. There wouldn't be any drone strikes which are happening with the connivance and the tacit approval of the government of Pakistan.
Mr. Sayed Tariq Pirzada, political and strategic affairs analyst with us there from Islamabad. Thank you very much. I'm afraid we've run out of time. I'd like to thank our guests with us via Skype from London, Chairman of the Association of Pakistani Lawyers in the UK, Mr. Amjad Malik, and also with us from London, political commentator Mr. Athar Hafiz Gowri. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being on this edition of The Debate. From me, Homa Lezgi. Until our next programme, goodbye.